action and approval for March 17th, 2021. Any comments, corrections? Good? All right, we'll take them as presented. New business, one, admin 2021-23, budget report for March, April, and May.
There's a lot of information in there, obviously, it's backlog. I sent out the sales tax email last week that we had our highest month ever for March consumer sales, which is wild in concept. It's like one of our lowest months usually. So we still don't know, you know, what that's caused by specifically, if one business or a couple, you know, had a really good month. But the statewide sales tax increase was, you know, 40% on average up. So that's got to be stimulus payments, and maybe compared to the pandemic, but then also, you know, some other X factor that's in there too. So wildly unexpected, but good news for us. That's money that we didn't plan for. If that, you know, holds true for the rest of the year based on what we had seen in prior months, you know, you're looking at double-digit sales tax increases easy, which is amazing too. So something we're watching. We did get use tax info after I had sent out that email. So use tax again was the online previous sales tax that they then changed the methodology on, and even that was up. And that was after the 20, 30, 40, 50% increases we saw during the pandemic when they were changing the sales tax methodology. So even though it looks like the online sales tax is fully transitioned to like local sales tax, it seems like the use taxes, you know, have not clawed back as we expected. So that's good news too. And on top of that, Illinois keeps posting almost record income tax performance. So, you know, after years of kind of having some mitigating issues based on budget or economy or political decisions, you know, it's been increasing unexpectedly as well. So, you know, our share of that is on a per capita basis, so we're going to benefit from the census results whenever those are received here in a few months, after benefiting from them during the special census we did. And, you know, on top of that, the governor's proposals to cut LGDF were not taken, and the loopholes that he had imposed for corporate income taxes were left in place. So that's almost like a double whammy to the good side for us. So as far as state revenues go, they're still unexpectedly positive, and so that's, you know, reflected in the reports. On the expenditure side, the departments are doing what they have been for the past 10 or 15 years, even with the pandemic. You know, they were still pretty frugal with their expenditures. Our costs associated with COVID were relatively mitigated, and certainly they were offset by the CARES funds that we received too, so that's been an unexpectedly positive result too. So we'll see what happens in the next few months. I still think that at some point or another, when people start going on vacation again and leaving town, you know, and shopping elsewhere, that our sales taxes will probably regress a little bit. But I think the more the bigger factor is going to be the shift to online. We still have a young community that's still doing online more than in person, and that benefits us tremendously. So so things are relatively good on the revenue side still. Anybody have any questions?
Good.
All right, good.
Let's go on to 2, admin 2021-24, the
treasurer's report for March, April, and May. Yeah, we've got a couple of them here. So for the month ending March 31st, our beginning fund balance of $12,703,923. Year-to-date revenues of $31,252,912. Year-to-date expenses of $29,102,429 for projected ending fund balance of $14,854,405. For the month ending April 30th, 2021, beginning fund balance of $12,703,923. Year-to-date revenues of $34,225,542. Year-to-date expenses of $31,278,863. For a projected ending fund balance of $15,650,602. And for the May 31st, 2021 report, obviously beginning and ending fund balance numbers have disappeared. As we work on the audit, we'll get those finalized and they'll reappear back on this report, probably starting with the August administration committee. But so far, to date, May year-to-date revenues are 11,100,000. $113,773,000, and year-to-date expenditures are $1,561,653.
Comments or questions? Okay, let's consent agenda. So one, two, three, and then 2021-25, the cash statement for August, September.
Now these are informational, as always. The first page is our cash balances, the second page our investment balances. These will be caught up through the fiscal year for the meeting in July. So I just want to let you know we're on the cusp of getting caught up from our staff shortage and finance, so we should be back on track starting in July with those reports.
Comments or questions?
Just for that, so watching what the feds are doing and the economy changes for the cash on hand and our investments, do you see any strategic changes coming down the road for us?
No, last I heard it was probably in spring or the feds continuing to target 0%. So I don't expect interest rates to really be, they're going to trickle up a little bit because they can't get much lower than they are right now.
They announced their increase 1 year earlier, 23, but that's not like it's now nothing that they can lose.
Yeah, I don't see us really being able to get a lot of yield even in fiscal year 22, hopefully 23, they'll start to improve. But I'm just investing where I can safely. Obviously, preservation of principal is goal number one, but there's just not a lot of yield out there for the types of things.
In your packet, you have 3 months of website reports. We are back on track post-pandemic now with pre-pandemic numbers, visits to our website, and that's just due to all of the events that are going on in the city. So Park and Rec has been hard at work in getting new events with the social gathering last week to really drive up our numbers. So if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Close to my vest when I tell them. So that way it doesn't make it.
I don't know. do that. I'll take library.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So more than because you saw public safety too, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we're more than we got public safety. Oh, yeah. We even helped out that way.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Okay. Meeting dates. Let's go on to admin 2021-28 meeting dates. Are we all okay with our meeting dates and timing? Seven, the end in 2021-29, the solar site RFP discussion.
All right, we've got Chris Childress from Progressive here. He is going to walk through the presentation that is in the packet. Aaron, I'm not going to share the screen and keep things simple. If that's okay, you got it there. If anybody else pops in, then I will share it that way. Otherwise, we're going to keep it relatively simple.
Right, good to see everybody again. I don't know if you need,
no,
you guys probably can hear me. So I just want to share with you why we think the timing is now, and it's primarily driven around, I don't know how much you guys follow this legislation that's going on down in Springfield right now, but they're going to repopulate this fund, which by the way, we all contribute to. And I know there are a lot of different opinions on solar. Some people like it, some people don't like it, but here's one thing I know. Is they're taking money out of each of our electric bill every month. I'm a member of the Fox Metro board, and my position on that is if there's money out there and I can bring it back to my community, I want to bring those dollars back to the community. And that's really kind of the philosophy we've entered into, and we're working with King County, we're working with where we did the Kendall County one, Fox Metro, Moose Heart, and a number of other solar fields in the area. And we're able to bring those dollars back to the community without them having to spend any of their capital dollars. So the way we do it is through what they call a PPA, a power purchase agreement. But in this RFP, we're gonna look at it both ways. So should you wanna go fund it yourself, we're gonna show those economics. And should you wanna go through a power purchase agreement, we're gonna show what those economics would be. It's really a no-cost look. It doesn't cost anything to look. And the idea and the scope is really to gather the information so that we can come back and share with you what a potential savings opportunity looks like or doesn't look like for all your different facilities. The other thing I'd like to cover is really there's two types of solar fields that we're looking at. One is what they call a behind-the-meter solar field, which the power is used by an actual facility, and then there's what they call a community solar field. So Kendall County, Fox Metro, Moose Heart were all what they call behind the meter solar fields. All that power is consumed by those groups, okay? A community solar field can be put out in the middle of nowhere, as long as there's a power line to shoot the power into. The value of that is that subscribers from the community or elsewhere can subscribe to that solar field, and in that situation, it's kind of a land rental situation. So we're looking at both those here. You've got some vacant land we're looking at. We want to see what the value is for people to come in and put a solar field, you know, on that. And in that case, it would actually rent that land from you for the next 25 years. And we're also looking at the behind the meters for your fields or for your facilities here. We're looking at the franchise location. So you have franchise electric where you get quote unquote free electric. It's not free. The taxpayer pays for it, but you're able to recover it through they recoup it on the bill. And we're looking at both those. Again, build this economic case, and then you guys make a decision on which way you want to move going forward. The value of a power purchase agreement versus an ownership model, and typically why those win out, is because as a city, you're unable to take the federal tax credits, the accelerated depreciation, and then there's no capital investment. So, I mean, those are some of the key components. When you look at the, let's just use Kendall County Solar Field. Had they have not gone with the power purchase agreement and funded it themselves, they would have been, cost themselves about $1 million because with the accelerated depreciation and the federal tax credits, which you guys can't use, that's what those numbers worked out to. So. By doing a PPA, they can credit you those dollars back, their finance groups credit those dollars back and lower what they call the PPA rate. In terms of responsibilities, pretty straightforward. You guys, your sole responsibility is consuming the power and pay for it, okay? You don't have any upfront cost in it. The solar company builds it, designs it, finances it. They take the accelerated depreciation and the tax rebates. They get all the SREC dollars from the Illinois Power Authority, and they bear all the financial risk as to then they've got to operate those fields for over the 25 years. ComEd still maintains the service lines. ComEd is still responsible for making sure if something fails there that you continue to get your power. And in terms of scope, the larger the facilities, the more payback there is. So where we really think the highest value is going to be is your areas where your pumping stations that use the largest amount of power, especially power during the day. So anytime we can cut power from your daytime load, that significantly drops your bill because power is more expensive there during the day than it is at night. Selection criteria, our goal is to lower on those facilities your electric cost between 10 and 20%. Repurpose, you know, land that you have. So you've got rooftops here, you've got rooftops elsewhere. It's adding value out of those rooftops if it's done at a lower rate than what you're currently paying today. The likelihood of being approved. So the rules are still being designed, but as we understand it, the people from down south were a little bit upset, excuse me, the people in the city were a little bit upset that all these community solar fields went to rural locations. Okay, so if you go to DeKalb County and some of the counties farther west, that's where most of those community solar fields went to. And so the people down in the city were going, you know, this isn't right. Well, there's not too many 7 to 10 acre plots that you can put a community solar field in downtown Chicago because that land's much more valuable. So they're trying to, this time, wait on a community solar field. If you put it downtown, you get more points and have a higher chance of getting it. To just give you some idea, there were over 1,000 fields that were submitted, and less than 20% of them got an opportunity to be built during this last bill. We were very successful. We got all ours built, but that's because we did behind-the-meter ones that focused on the power being driven to the customer. In terms of the locations we're looking at, we've already done some pre-analysis. Bart and his group sent us out all the locations. We had some of them from when we did the electric analysis. These ones at the bottom are the ones we're primarily going to focus on because of, due to their size and whether they're franchised or not. I mean, I hesitated to do the franchise ones because, again, it's that you're not being charged for those locations right now, but your residents are. However, if we can give a break to the residents, then in the end, it's better for the community. And without the data, we can't even make a recommendation. So let's go get the data and then let's make a recommendation after that. And then on the backside of that, you know, we're looking at, you know, the one non-franchise locations too, which really primarily fall around where the wells are and the pump stations. Lastly, the community solar field locations. Now, are you really going to take out the baseball fields? It'd have to be a pretty steep economic case, I'm sure, to do that. But again, without the financial data, you know, it's pretty tough to make a decision on that. At least when we come back, you will have looked at all the potential large site locations. And then on the last page is just a kind of gives you an idea of the questions we go through on this RFP with the solar providers. They're notorious for not giving you what you ask for. And so we always try to compare these things apples to apples and line them up. So that's what our group will do. And we go through this chart. You'll see this chart again with other providers. Typically, we're finding, like in Kane County and some of the other areas, 3 to 5 solar developers are coming in right now. They know this bill is going to be passed. The bill almost has to get passed because if they don't, they've got to refund about $360 million to each of us. And I doubt that the state is going to give that money back. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
So the general concept is an RFP. So you'd be authorizing Progressive to issue the RFP on our behalf. They would do almost all the legwork with RFP and bid administration, and then kind of a thumbs up, thumbs down on whether we want to proceed forward with the project, or it's proceeding forward with analyzing the project, not even committing to it at that point. And then we would be negotiating with a solar farm developer in general, and then we would have a city council approval at a later date. Site and agreements and all these other things that he's been talking about.
Pictures,
yeah.
What it would look like.
Yeah, and so all we're asking for is basically the acknowledgement that we're going to go out to RFP, that Progressive is going to spend their time analyzing it. They don't charge us for any of this work up front. If they're successful in convincing us to build a solar farm at some point or another, they get compensated at that point, but it's not from us directly, correct?
That's correct.
So, you know, there's little risk in us doing it other than the staff time coordinating with Progressive at this point. Given the success of the Kendall County solar farm, you know, I figured that this was something that was worth our time and effort to see if we can save ourselves a couple $100,000 a year. So I did want to clarify one other thing that Chris mentioned, the correct facts here. I think I had it incorrectly in my memo. We're only going to be going out to bid for about 20
about
sites.
About 20 sites.
So the larger sites. So the weather warning sirens and all those other things, we're skipping those. So those are probably not going to be fruitful, the smaller sites too. So we're looking at like medium to large size sites. And we'll see if it works out. To Chris's point, you know, there's no guarantee that we're going to, I think it's a steep hill to climb to say we're going to rip out baseball fields and put in a solar farm, but if the economics are there and we can build a baseball field somewhere else, maybe. So we'll see. So that's the proposal in front of you. I can take questions.
Any questions?
So this is not a city RFP. Actually, this is a third party on our behalf.
If
they're going to receive the responses, they're going to review it. We are just a co-party to it. We're not the ones actually doing it.
Yeah, it would have our name on it.
Yes.
You know, it would say like authorized on behalf of the city. But all the proposals would be going to Progressive. They would do the majority of the bid administration. We would take questions and stuff if they were in line with whatever the RFP says. But in general, it is more of a third party.
So when the RFP, when it talks about the site visit meeting and the deadline date for questions in the fall, that's all managed.
That's so coming to us.
Yeah,
that's correct.
The internal staff, unless you, as the RFP solicitor, have questions of the city.
That's
you
correct.
You need to contact directly to us. No one is coming directly to us.
No, but just so you know also, all the data we get goes to you.
After you have compiled it?
Yeah. I mean, even the original data we get, just so, you know, there's no, we want to be open and transparent.
And that's what I was going to get to, because when I first read it, I saw that all the information was being submitted to you as compared to the city. Okay, for an RFP, that seems different. Makes more sense if it's third party being run through you and then just providing us the information.
Right. And really, that's to avoid him being bombarded, them being bombarded, because there is significant. I mean, we're doing three of them right now, and the questions are significant from the parties. So if we're sending it to you and you're sending the question to us, you know, it's logistically just doesn't make sense. And it's consistent with the way we've done it with Fox Metro and Kendall County. But I wanted to assure you, and as I told Bart, every day, all the data we get and the questions we get will be forwarded to you at the end with our responses, so that you're getting the full amount of the data.
So that works. This is great. That's no cost to us. What's the benefit to you? I know you're a rep on the
aggregation.
Yeah. So this is just an offshoot of the aggregation.
Yeah, well, to be quite honest, we do your energy as your consultant for as an energy broker for you guys too. So, and we get paid, you know, by the winning supplier there. We're really neutral to this because the shift that goes from that supplier is going to go over to this supplier. So it's going to be the same either way. So there's really no advantage to us, Progressive, to do this. It's just we feel added value that our group's able to do this, and if we can lower your energy costs, which we're always trying to do, then you'll look favorably and use us next time to go out for your electric costs.
Right. That sounds good to me. I mean, you're looking out for our interests.
Yeah. Otherwise, why do you need us, right?
Yeah. I don't know if anyone has anything. I just wanted to touch base on the sites a little bit. So it's good to know we're only looking at the Exhibit A. That's the list on what the page 180 feet.
Yeah, it's the ones that say yes. It's this page, this page, and then there's a few on this page.
Yeah, but on Exhibit A, to your point, those are those sites.
Solar fit, yeah.
Yeah, that's the short list. So my thought is, I don't have an issue looking at the buildings, looking at some of those types of things if they work for us. When it comes to the ball fields, yeah, I have a concern on that. There's a reality of converting and finding new locations for those. That seems like there'd have to be an awful lot of money for that, and then
right.
We have to go through the process of, well, transitioning, creating new parks to accommodate the locations, eliminate parks that have uses on. Things like Kennedy property, or Campbell Trail property, you know, that one. We just received our appraisal on that one there as a consideration for sale or use. So those types of things, as long as we're not putting, you know, the cart before the horse in this one, we're actually looking at what our considerations are for possible sale or reuse of properties, as these seem to be running somewhat parallel at the moment. With this RFP going out. Okay, for this to go out, and also we sell a piece of property, and then we have to do an amendment in what I'm going to do. A little change happened.
I think you're dead on. I mean, do I think that you're going to end up tearing out your ball fields for this? No, but I don't know the answer to what the financial benefit is, and I didn't want you guys coming and going, well, how much could we have gotten for that? So the thought was, let's go look, and then have you guys reject is really the way that we think that you should do it.
And what was the rationale for removing these small items of the list?
Just scope. Typically, these larger solar fields are a different group than your sirens. We can always run in behind that, and there's usually money always available. It's more of a residential application on those sirens, and our path is to follow this up with that. Getting these guys around to 20 different sites is quite a task. Corralling 5 different people, 20 different sites, 20 different applications. Could we do this? Could we do that? And then they respond the way they want to respond, not the way you've asked them to respond. But we'll get it all lined up. And
that is what it sounds like.
That is. It is.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, sir.
This has to do with the question. If there's ever a surplus of power generated by these solar fields, right?
Yes.
In residential circumstances, it's sent back to the grid. I mean, you don't get a credit from ComEd, and we need money. Is that the same for municipalities?
Yeah, you get a, what they credit you for the power, actually. But, you know, the reason why, our approach on this is we always size these for what your peak contribution to the grid is during the day. We don't size them for, you know, for instance, in the RFP, let's say the treatment well uses 709,000 kilowatt hours. We wouldn't size it for 709 because the nighttime power is cheaper than daytime power. We size it for the peak of the daytime power. Because nighttime power is cheaper. So, but if there is extra, you are credited with it, and you can use it as a later date. I think it's 110% of your usage is what you can size it for currently.
And,
otherwise, you lose it and they keep it.
You're still paying ComEd, even with solar energy, right? Because they got meter fees and
yes.
So ComEd is not cut out of the loop.
Yeah, it's a great question because they still are going to collect taxes and they're still going to the environmental fund, but some of those are based on how much you take off the grid. So the ones that are based on how much you take off the grid, it helps you. The other ones that are not just get passed on, or they get passed back to you.
So the kilowatt per hour rate would kind of dramatically decrease, but they're staying. Typical monthly fees, the same as a resident, right?
Right.
Same base, meter fees, and connection fees, and all that stuff every month.
Yeah, it will go down. And that's where the savings comes from.
Do these different companies that would be submitting proposals have different kilowatt per hour rates?
Yes, each one will be different based on the uniqueness of the application. So how difficult, you know, this is a very easy application to install solar panels on versus, you know, they're gonna have to get creative on some of your, with your well towers. You know, we might not be able to max out what we need there because you just don't have the land to do it. But yeah, each rate will be different. And we'll compare that, not to what the ComEd rate is. We're gonna, because you pay a lower rate than what ComEd does, is charging customers. So we'll compare it to what the supplier rate is, you know, to make it even more, you know, it doesn't, because you're not paying the ComEd rate, it'd be great to show you greater savings, but that's not what you're paying.
Is it per panel charge, these companies?
It's typically a per kilowatt charge. So they would charge you, let's say, 6 cents a kilowatt hour. Let's say all in right now, you're probably about 8 cents a kilowatt hour. You know, that's the way that they would charge you.
Yeah, we can throw it on the agenda, and the motion will probably be just to, you know, direct Progressive to issue the RFP and bring it back, you know, after it's complete.
Okay. All right. And if you guys got any questions, he knows how to get a hold of me, or give me a call. We live this stuff, so feel free to give me a call at any time with any questions you might have.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go on to 8,
Admin
2021-30, intergovernmental agreement.
Okay, so we forecasted within the budget memo that the IGA for the purchasing manager expires at the end of the calendar year. So in order to hire someone, we need to extend that out. We did choose a 5-year term after we talked to Oswego. We just felt like that's the time when we re-ask formally to extend it again. Practically, the agreement has a 6-month out, and as we've seen a couple times now, sometimes that can be ended, you know, sooner rather than later, you know, through mutual negotiation with our other organization. So that's a proposal. You know, we've talked about it in the past budget. The first purchasing manager was definitely savings focused, and I think that she proved her value there, which is the goal of a purchasing manager, obviously, is to be able to, you know, dedicate that they've saved enough money to justify their salary. And then with the last purchasing manager, COVID hit, and so that was the majority of her time. And we did see pretty big value in that because it was one person learning the ins and outs of the Cures funds and all these other things that need to be done rather than somebody from each organization doing it. So that was more of a management time savings, you know, during that time than it was an actual hard cost savings. So that's a proposal, and happy to take any questions if you have them. Yeah, we can pull up some of the old data and then extract some of the new data. I would say that probably since, you know, Q4 Q4 of 2019, you know, there wasn't a real big push to make sure any of that was quantified. We'll see if we can pull out of emails and files and stuff and put it together. That's new information for you. So
it would be helpful.
Yeah.
Just going out for RFQs, RFPs, other staff are doing that prior.
Yeah.
So that's more of a quantitative exercise of saving time for others.
Yeah, and difference in salary between that person.
Salary and difference of experience, my reason.
Yep.
So however you can put that together, I mean,
for sure.
Okay, so we can send this to City Council and get that information in the back of them. Is that okay with everybody? David, answer any questions on that? Okay. All right, let's go on to 9. Amendment 2021-31, the procurement code update.
Okay, Erin's got a nice memo in the packet. It did come from Carrie before she left, and this is generally a cleanup. It's some language congruence within the code, and then quantifying or specifying exactly what we've been doing procurement code-wise. So there isn't anything in here that's a major policy shift from what we've been doing as much as it is just cleanup and making sure that our code is correct.
Any comments or questions on this?
Let's see, it's actually number 4. One question, a couple things. So in the proposed language number 1, it talks about the 50% or more increase requires a rebid. It seems like an awfully high threshold to be allowed without a rebid. Can we go through the rationale of that number? Where did that come from? Is that something statutory being set, or is that
right, but you said it's in the first change to the memo?
Yes, page 218 is number 4.
Oh, this is going to generally mimic the state law. The language is mostly the same. So anything that's reflected in there is. Is it verbatim, Erin, do you know? Or is it like a summary and the reference?
Verbatim with the reference also in there.
Yeah, so that whatever that is what the state requires. So
that obviously seemed like we just want to make sure that. And then the next part talks about the change orders not required to rebid from $10,000 to $25,000.
Yeah.
Is that the same?
Yes. Yeah.
Story? It just seems very strange to put that put in there. In excess of $10,000 and up to $25,000. So that seems a little odd in the way that it does that thing. I actually prefer a language better than what we had.
Yeah. State law.
So so those we have no room for change on that unless we were involved in the opposite state law.
Yeah, we were trying to just reference language so it was more clear that somebody pulled it up. See that it will require us to amend it from time to time, but I'm hopeful that the fact that there's an ILCS reference in there that Mark's reading it, you know, double check it. So,
any other questions? All right, we're good. We're sending that to the council. And we're into old business. Amendment 2021-11 City Meeting Streaming Policy.
Yeah, so this is going to, I think, dovetail into kind of a city buildings update, too, because we've been working on the schematic design of the Prairie Point building, and one of the focuses has been, based on the feedback that everybody gave us during the planning process, to make sure that the AV in the city council chamber is correct, modern, new. So the permanent kind of focus on city meeting streaming will be that we are still progressing in that way. We're making sure that the sight lines and where the dais is located, the AV closet, and then the materials are there are all, you know, built into the walls and everything so that it's, you know, correct. And then during that process, we're going to have to engage probably somebody that does tech work for, you know, chambers and cities and stuff and boardrooms. And so as an offshoot of that, I'm hoping that whatever system we end up permanently going with, in the chamber, we're going to be able to kind of do like a mobile system where we can take it into a conference room or a different meeting with the builder, even off-site, to be able to just plug into a laptop and do Zoom or streaming or whatever, and it, you know, functions as it should. So that's the route that I'm taking. I haven't gone through and done a bunch of due diligence on the mobile stuff first because I was waiting for the permanent thing to kind of bubble up, and then, you know, piggyback off of that.
Comments or questions?
Does this seem to be like the end of the consortium?
The cable consortium? Well, that is a whole different discussion, I think. Comcast has been asking us about, you know, the status of channels and everything. I have not had any conversations with Mike Reynolds, who's now the mayor in Plano, so I have to imagine that he has some, you know, specific ideas about what he wants to do there. And so we're waiting actually for another meeting to kind of figure out what's going on there.
Yes.
I think that would be a good thing to follow up on. This is kind of the this. But that was the impetus of this discussion because we were lacking our audio and video recording. So this is having Zoom itself. Well, I know we have our audio from Intaker, but what happens to Zoom videos once we have them?
Right. We've been storing them in the cloud for now, so they are part of the Zoom system that we pay for, and so they've been archived and kind of waiting for us to figure out if we're going to edit them, compress them, you know, post them somewhere ourselves, or whether we're just going to, you know, put them on a CD drive and file them away.
Is that something that we can link to them to the websites?
Not without a significant increase in our website infrastructure, because of, like, hosting and data issues.
So I was going to say, we were publishing them before by using YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
We may be able to do something like that, too. It's just it hasn't been, hit the priority list yet for us. So.
Okay. Clearly, it's a priority for me, having the meeting stream, having the public be able to see and hear us as quickly as possible. That's my goal with this. And I know we've been talking about this for quite some time now, and I'm going to be critical here. This is language for a long time.
Individual, you know, employees or departments if you have, yeah.
questions. Not
yeah, yeah. No, we said everybody should be back if you can. Requires department head, recommendation and my approval, basically, to continue working from home on a long-term basis. It has been the mayor's directive that as many people should be back in the office as possible. So we've been trying to work within that while still being accommodating to people who have child care issues and stuff as it comes up.
I was just curious.
Yep.
Anybody, anything else?